Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is no guest at all. Richard and I are going into our grab bag of mailbag of listener questions, and we have a bunch of them, and we're going to answer them. Before we get started on that, we have a favor to ask of our listeners. Richard.
Right. I haven't done this in a long, long time, but I just wanted to encourage our listeners to rate the show in whatever podcast format they get it in, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Just take the time to go in and rate us, or even better would be to write a little review. So that would help us out. That helps more people find the show.
Good. Thank you. Richard, at one time you gambled in Poland. Do you have any stories from there?
Oh, you know, I meant to, I forgot to tell you we should put this later in the show, but I've told stories about Poland before. Man, I could probably do a whole show about what happened in Poland, but...
Okay.
Well, so what happened was, back in, I think it was 1990 or so, somewhere back then, a guy who worked as a pit boss up in Lake Tahoe invented a game called Over Under. And you could bet whether your first two cards in blackjack were going to be over or under 13. And you look like you had a question, but okay. So this is a quite a lucrative side bet. And at the time, they were dealing it at Caesars in Lake Tahoe, and a lot of pros were up there pounding away at it because the limit was either $1,000 or $2,000.
On the side bet.
On the side bet, wow. Yeah. You could bet whatever you were betting on your blackjack hand.
Okay, and wouldn't they had a good blackjack game? And so.
Right. So anyway, that was not going to last long because people were pounding it so heavily. So I called the pit boss up there who invented the game. And I told him I was a journalist and I was writing an article about these new games and casinos.
Clever, clever.
And so I asked him, where else did they have this bet besides Caesars Tahoe? And there were a couple of other places in the States, but the limits were very low. And I said, are there any other countries that offer this bet? And he said, I don't really know, but he gave me the name of the company in England that was handling the international distribution.
Uh-huh.
So I called them, gave them the same story that I was writing this article, and they said, well, they've just opened a casino in Poland, and we've placed it there. So I called my partner, Daryl, and I'm like, we're off to Warsaw, and we decided to take a Japanese big player with us because Asian players can always win more money than Caucasians, especially on American passports. And so we flew off to Poland, and sure enough, they had the game with a $1,000 max. And, you know, we lasted, well, the Japanese big player lasted 2 days before they told him he couldn't play anymore. And at that time, we were up about 70,000. And I remember the worst moment was after they barred Rocky, that's the Japanese player's name, the dealer said, well, yeah, he goes, I don't know what the big deal is. He goes, yeah, the guy won a lot of money, but I mean, what's he going to do with it? And Daryl and I look at each other and we go, what do you mean? And he goes, well, it's all in zlotys. You know, you can't do anything with them. You can't convert them and you can't take them out of the country. And we're like, what? Oh. So that turned out to be only half true. You could convert them. So we busily ran around all these money exchangers and got the money transferred into U.S. dollars.
At a pretty bad rate, I assume.
Yeah, pretty bad rate. But then we had to figure out, how do we get the money out of the country?
Yes.
So we had these ideas, like buying a couple of Mercedes-Benz and driving them across the border and reselling them. And we didn't really come up with a good solution. So we got a safe deposit box, which was a joke. I mean, it was like a little cigar box with a, you know, a key about an inch long that they just kept in this metal cart at the bank. But we didn't really feel like we had much choice. And so we left the money there for a year. And then Daryl and I went back. And to make a long story short, we ended up just smuggling the money out. And we decided we would fly out of Krakow instead of out of Warsaw, because it's a smaller airport. And you have to drive right by Auschwitz to go to this airport. So it was just a horrible morning. Full of fear. One of the things, just an interesting human note, was I was not able to eat for about 24 hours before this plane flight because I was so nervous. And Daryl couldn't stop eating. It was, he had the exact opposite reaction.
Well, it sounds like it averages out.
Yeah, right. But he had the money strapped around his calves in those sort of ankle wallets. And we got through with no problems. We get on the plane. And Daryl, when we fly, he always immediately sort of puts on a sleep mask and headphones and goes to sleep, which he did as soon as we were on the plane. And as soon as the plane took off, we're ascending. And the stewardess comes down the aisle and she starts tapping him. And she says, "Sir, sir." And, you know, he takes off his sleep mask and says, "What?" And she points at the floor, and $100 bills are just pouring out of the bottom of his pants down onto the floor of the plane. And, you know, we sort of dove down onto the floor and scooped them all back up. But
were you there as a diver or somebody to watch to make sure nobody else helped you?
I was helping dive. Because they were sliding, you know, because the plane was still at an incline. But there were a lot of crazy things that happened, because also I really felt like I had time traveled when I got to Poland, because it looked like they didn't, like no one in the country owned any paint. And I rented a car and drove from Warsaw to Krakow, and like all of the homes and buildings were gray and looked like they hadn't been painted in 50 years. And the weirdest thing that I saw, I felt like I was in a Fellini movie or something. It started to rain and I drove by this farm that had like fog, and there were people in the field wearing black cloaks cutting the field with scythes. Like, it was just so bizarre to see. Yeah, it was, as I say, like a Fellini movie or something. Anyway, it was a really interesting trip, profitable but stressful.
Yeah, I've heard that story a number of times, and I always enjoy the way he tells stories. And since he's actually practicing storytelling and taking classes in storytelling now, the story keeps getting better, with more details that are added. So every time I hear that story, I hear some more details in it.
It's, I actually have a whole nother story about just us converting the money, but I don't want to take up the whole show telling stories about Poland. So,
well, there's a good chance that our questions are enough to go 2 weeks straight. So folks, get ready for another Polish story.
Some other time I'll tell the story about changing the money.
All right. I will hold you to that. Next question. I'd like to know if Bob has any information behind station casinos removing their full pay deuces wild machines. I don't. Full pay deuces has been on the way out for a number of years, where recently the casinos offering it punished the players for playing it. Instead of $1 a point, it costs $4 a point, and the mailers for players who played that game A lot might go all the way up to $5 a week if they were lucky. And if you still didn't take the hint, you were kicked out of the casino.
But, I mean, if you owned a casino, why would you? I mean, there would be one reason to have that game, and that is if enough suckers played it badly to more than make up for the good players who play it well. And, you know, I doubt that that's what was happening, so why would you keep it?
Well, there's that. And the game, to fill in a bit, the game comes with a 0.75% player average. So fast players can make $8, $10 an hour on the game with very little risk. It's a low variance game. And the games are fine if they have a marketing message of the loosest video poker games in town. $8 an hour on relatively few games on a casino with a big, big floor is small change. But that isn't Station's message. Station has a more of a market of higher quality restaurants, such as they are, and so they have tighter machines. So the games are gone. I've heard there's still some games at Sam's Town. I don't know. This is hearsay. I haven't verified that. I don't know how long those games will last. And it's sad news. There's a legion of full-pay deuces players. They're primarily senior citizens looking for an extra money to supplement their Social Security. Now they're going to have to find something else to do. It's, okay. Here's a question for Richard. If you have soft 13 to 16 and a strong negative count, does it make sense to double on this when the dealer has a 2 through 6 since you should get a small card to improve your total?
The answer is no, because the dealer is also more likely to get a small card and thus bust less often. It's a disaster when you double, say, ace-deuce and catch a 2 or a 3 or a 4, and now you don't have the ability to hit the hand again. So there are index numbers for, you know, when you should not double those hands, and index numbers for, a hand that is not basic strategy to double, like ace-deuce against a 3. There are index numbers for when that does become the right play, but those index numbers are positive, not negative. So, yeah. So the basic answer is, yes, it's you will catch more small cards, but no, it's not the correct thing to do.
Uh-huh. Another question for Richard. I know that blackjack side bets are considered a sucker's bet, but if you're counting cards, would it ever be plus EV to play the lucky ladies? It would seem that at a certain count, you have a higher probability of being dealt 20. That would make the side bet worth it.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, they have talked about this in some books, but I don't remember off the top of my head which ones. But I believe the index number, for example, for the high-low is a true count of 7. Makes the lucky ladies a, you know, positive bet. So you might be able to find that on Wizard of Odds. The information is out there, I mean, depending on what count you use. But yeah, the bottom line is, yes, it can be a positive bet, and you just have to find out what the index number is for the particular count you're using.
It doesn't get to plus 7 very often.
No, that's true.
So if you're somebody who only takes the bet, say, 4 times an hour, and I just made that number up, does that make you look like a sharp counter or just somebody who is has a hunch and is gambling?
I don't think it's going to register really one way or the other.
Okay, good.
I mean, the other thing is, what do you think you're making on that? I mean, often the maximum bet on this side bet is $25. So, you know, if you have a few percent edge and you get to make it
2%, that's 50 cents.
Yeah, right, exactly.
If you have enough 50 cents, is pretty soon you got up to $2.
That's right. There you go.
All right. We talked about the double up feature on games recently, and we got a note from somebody that said, it wasn't a question, but it was about his experience. He said it's been at least a half dozen years since he took advantage of it, but when it was around, he did it a lot. As far as the feature, as far as he knows, the feature may still exist. It was a small manufacturer servicing basically Indian casinos. The double up feature would offer you an 8 after winning hand, and you would bet higher than an 8 or lower than an 8. The thing is, it was not a fresh shuffle. So in video poker, if you'd been dealt 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you would double up and bet high. If you had king, 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 queen, queen, you would double up and bet low. I don't think that I even told my mom about this. It might be over now. Maybe not. Now, as for me, I've never played at these Indian casinos and don't know anything about this. Whether or not it still exists, I'm not sure. But knowing the possibility of it, several of our listeners play at these places periodically, and it might be something to check out. Sometimes just knowing the possibility of it, you can find it. Now, here we have two questions from the same person. And knowing that they're the same person might help with the answer. The first question is one we get a lot, and the second question tells us who the questioner is. The first question, is it worth to count cards on 6-deck shoes on the strip? Which is a question we've had many times. And the second one, what do you think of betting don't pass 6 and 8 and hard 4 and 10s off the come out? Is that a good strategy? And knowing that the questions came from the same person is kind of telling. Now, those hard way bets at craps have about 11% house edge. And this show is based on playing when you have the advantage, and 11% house edge is really hard to overcome. So the answer to that second question is no. For the counting 6-deck shoes on the strip, I'll leave that to Richard.
Well, yes, you could gain an advantage counting 6-deck shoes here on the strip or pretty much anywhere else. So, I mean, as long as it's not 6 to 5. And actually, on the strip, you do have to be careful of that, about that, because there are a lot of 6 to 5 games that are 6-deck shoes on the strip. And that I would not recommend that as a way of trying to make any money. So, so anyway, yes, there is money to be made counting 6-deck shoes.
And you probably won't last long if you do.
Yeah, especially here in Las Vegas where, you know, they're going to spread your picture very quickly from, you know, one casino to the next.
The next question, when I read it, my guess is Richard doesn't even know what I'm talking about. It's a video poker question. See if Richard can figure out what it's talking about. It is, I've been racking my brain and cannot fathom why you would hold 3 sixes and a 3, but not 3 eights and a 4. There must be a different pay schedule or some other variable not discussed. Correct? I know, never go to Vegas anymore. I feel too gouged on price at every turn, so I can't attend your classes to find out. Do you have any idea what he's talking about?
Well, I think he must be talking about the game of quick wads.
Bingo. He is talking about the game of quick wads. I'm not sure that the answer lends itself to radio, but I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to watch Richard's eyes, and if they glass over, I'll know I'm being too obscure. On quick quads, you get paid for 4-of-a-kind quads when you get 3-of-a-kind, and the other two cards add up to the rank of the trips, like 6-6-6-3-3 or 8-8-8-3-5. As the listener presumes, the value of 6-6-6-3 and 8-8-8-4 have exactly the same value. with 47 cards out there, you can draw one card to get a natural four of a kind and three cards to get a quick quad. So from 6663, there's still three more cards in the deck. So those two have the same value. The difference is that 888 by itself is higher in value than 666. Now, this is unusual, but in video poker, but in quick quads, this is the case. Because in 888, you can get four different ways to get quick quads. You can get a 7 and a 2, a 6 and a, seven and an ace, 6 and 2, 5 and 3, or 4, 4. From 666, there are only three ways, 5 ace, 4, 2, and 3, 3. That extra quick quad happens 16 times, four of one card, four of the other. And there's only 1,081 chances out there. And then the value of it is whatever the quick quads are worth, which are typically 250, but it can vary by game, minus whatever the trips are worth, which are typically 15. So as it happens, the value of 6663 and 8884 is higher than the value of 666 itself and lower than the value of 888 by itself. So in video poker, it's not the absolute value of a hold that counts. It's the relative value of that hold compared to the other possible holds in the hand.
Okay, so you would keep 4-4-4-2, but if you had 10-10-10, you would not keep a 5.
Correct, in most games. Now, it varies by games.
Yeah, right. It's the, yeah.
But yes.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Good. So next time Richard plays quick quads, which might not be in this millennium, by the way. Okay. This is next is from a craps player. He regularly follows the podcast and he enjoys our guests. Thank you. I'd like to hear more from craps experts that focus on the probability and statistics of dice results. You've had a number of dice control experts who are outstanding. However, I'm an enthusiast who never throws the dice. I'm far from an advantage player, but I manage to frequently grind out small wins using math and probability. I believe in the theory that a small win beats a big loss. However, I feel the longer you stay, the more you pay. I can't be all alone in that camp. I'd appreciate hearing from others. You want to take it, or I can?
Well, what he says is true, right? The more you stay, the more you pay, because
right.
You are making bets with negative expectation.
Correct.
So the less of those bets you make, the better in the long run you will do. So that part's true. There was something else in there that was true. I forgot.
A small win beats a big loss.
Well, that's definitely true, too. Winning is beats losing. Whether they're big or small, winning is always better than losing. But, you know, you're still betting with a negative expectation. So there is no betting system out there or ever will be that can overcome a negative expectation.
Correct. There can be rule changes in craps or special promotions or something of that nature, which can give you an edge in craps. But it's not from any of these theories. It's like saying quit when you're ahead. It sounds really great, but it doesn't take into consideration whether you're a favorite. Now, it's not quite commercial time yet, but very recently, Colin Jones from BlackjackApprenticeship.com published looking at the idea of, is it possible to play blackjack where you just go and win $100 a day every day and then just quit. And so you're totally off the radar, and that's how you do it. So I recommend the listener go ahead on YouTube and check out the Colin Jones video on this.
Now, even though your game is craps.
The same idea applies. Yeah. And even more so because the edge at craps is much worse against the players than good blackjack games, but not bad blackjack games. All right, let's move on. Hello, Bob and Richard. I've been renting a car for my weekend trips, doing full-time AP Friday through Sunday, roughly 60 hours total work. Between rental, gas, and hotel, I'm spending roughly $300 on expenses each trip. Any tips on cutting costs on the expenses? Notable info is I'm a full-time AP in Oklahoma. I have a car, but I try to limit wear in my personal car as the trips cover roughly 2,000 miles each month. Thank you for the highly informative and entertaining podcast each week. Thank you very much. I like to learn as much as I can. So, small tips. Auto Slash was a sponsor for a while. They're still decent. This allows you to get cheaper car rentals if you know in advance when you're going to go and where you want to come from. So that's different than paying flat retail for renting the car. You can bring food from home. It takes some practice to figure out what foods pack well and are nutritious and satisfying, but it can be done. You can partner up with somebody, which cuts car expenses in half. Richard, do you have anything?
Well, the other thing is, if you're a full-time AP, then you can file as a professional gambler, and that, and all that's a tax write-off. The other thing you could do would be to, buy a second car that's just going to be for these trips. You know, it doesn't have to be a nice car. It could be, one with really good gas mileage and just beat it to death until it's dead, when he says he's 60 hours, I'm assuming those are playing hours, not inclusive of travel and things like that. That's only $5 an hour in EV going toward your expenses, which does not sound like that much. So unless you're playing really small.
If he's talking about Friday through Sunday, if you had 24 hours each of those days, that was only 72. So if
I wondered about that, but then he said he's a full-time AP. So
unless he's talking about 15 hours of play each month and four weekends, 15 hours of play each weekend and four weekends would add up to 60.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. 60 a month or 60 a week?
He said 60. He just did not.
He
did not say, but it could have been.
Anyway, $300 per weekend does not sound like that much in expenses. I mean, I don't know that you're going to be able to do much better than that. That sounds pretty cheap to me. I mean, unless you want to sleep in your car.
Yeah, that's when you buy that second car to grind to death, make it a station wagon. Do they have those anymore?
Well, or a Prius to, so you get the gas mileage, but.
All right. Or an economy SUV. So I have best of both worlds. Next question. He has a question regarding Keno pay tables. He was in a restaurant playing four-card Keno, waiting for his food, and hit 2 5 spots. Much to his surprise, the payout was 170 credits per instead of the usual 810 that he's used to seeing. I checked the pay tables, unfortunately, after the fact, to find out that they are much lower than expected. Is there a standard pay table, or are the machines set to the establishment owner's choice? The answer is Keno game manufacturers offer a variety of pay schedules for each game. Each location can pick among the pay schedules offered. And there's generally no player favorable pay schedule,
right.
But some are less unfavorable than others.
Also, if the, I think it was the four, what did he hit? 4 out of 5?
It was a 4-card Keno is the name of the game.
Oh.
And he hit 2 5 spots.
2 5 spots. It could very well be that the, if the payoff for that is much lower, the payoff for something else on the card might be much higher. You know what I mean? So, but as Bob said, they have all different pay tables, and it just differs wherever you go and whatever they set it to.
Yeah, and if you don't know how to figure out the odds on pay tables for Keno, Michael Shackelford's Wizard of Odds site has that information, as does his two versions of Gambling 102, which will give, well, actually, I don't know that. The first version of Gambling 102 had that. I'm not positive if the second one, if he included that or dropped it in the second edition. All right. This man says his Asian wife has blonde hair and is very memorable and very recognizable. I'm not merely as much fun to look at, but as a couple, we tend to stand out with our accoutrements, including designer handbags, jewelry, and nice clothes. People perceive us as wealthy, even though we are not. We just look the part. With that in mind, are hoping to use our persona to our advantage and hopefully appear as high-rolling gamblers when our big bets get out. However, we may sit at the same table and have identical bets, which I assume would be suspicious. He ran some simulations, betting with high-low, at the same time as KO, knockout blackjack, and we found we're only raising bets at the same time about two-thirds of the time, and very rarely the same amount. Since he's not going to separate their connection as a couple, is there any benefit to having her bet a KO bet progression while he bets high-low on the same shoe?
I think you would make more money if you sat at two different tables. So getting back to your look and being recognizable, that may buy you a little bit of time. Not a lot, but it may buy you a little time before someone decides to have you checked out. The downside of that is you're going to be memorable, so once you do get thrown out, it'll be a lot longer before you can go back. Although, if you went back without your wife, they may forget you much sooner than they will forget her. The other thing is, you said she's Asian. I would just have her bet the money, and you don't. And I think you'll last longer doing that as well.
Yeah, if he
and as to using the two different counts, it's going to be negligible. You're not really adding anything by using two different counts.
Yeah, if he needs to be at the same table in order to be her bodyguard or keep her from flirting or something of that nature, then he can be at the same table and bet the minimum, and she's just the one.
Yeah, betting
going on tilt. If I don't know which of the two is the better counter, it's possible one of them is better than the other, in which case it turns into a big player situation. All right, here's a player who's asking about starting video poker for his wife. He's a live poker player and have learned about us through Ed Miller's books. Thank you, Ed Miller. My wife doesn't play live poker, but she will play video poker while I play in the poker room. I want to be able to figure out which games are best to play at our closest casinos, which are in Jackpot, Nevada. How to play them accurately and how to get the most from the players club so we can both play and she can also play by herself while I'm at the poker tables. I looked at the website vpfree2.com, but I don't know how accurate it is since I know the Four Jacks Casino in Jackpot, Nevada is out of business and it's still listed in vpfree2. All right, there's a lot here and I can go for a little long or I can talk an hour on this. You're correct that vpfree2 is only as good as the volunteer monitors providing the information. With that said, it's been 10 years since I've been there. Four Jacks is a really tiny place, so it being out of business is negligible. And there's one big casino, Cactus Pete's, and one across the street called Highway 93. Those are the only two large ones. and Highway 93 isn't that large. And although Cactus Pete's is sizable compared to Vegas casinos, it's still small enough to scout personally if you know what you're looking for. It was built and run for years by Ameristar, but when that CEO, Craig Nielsen, died, Ameristar properties were sold off to various places, and in 2013, I think it is, the remainder that they had were sold off to Pinnacle, who I assume owns Cactus Pete's now, but I'm not sure. To scout, of course, you need to know what you're looking for. Start with VP Free 2, but you still need to know what you're looking for. For each game, double bonus, deuces wild, super double bonus, etc., you need to be able to tell a good game from a bad game. Now, a key to the pay schedules is found in my video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner book, and that might be the best place to start with to have a good idea of where it is. The key part of the return is the slot club and the promotions. The games themselves are unlikely to be over 100%. Very unlikely. However, if they have 10 times points on Wednesdays or such, it is possible some of the times you have a positive situation. You read everything at the booth, but don't expect the boothlings to be particularly knowledgeable about the ins and outs of the club. They're used to addressing slot players. And then you press money and goes, oh yeah, I remember video poker players pay less. They really don't know. So once you find a decent game, if you do, and you're playing it, you'll see others playing as well. If you befriend them, often they will help you along with the ins and outs of the clubs in the town. I don't know you or your wife, as far as I know, but how is she going to learn video poker? If you're the more knowledgeable gambler in the family, you may need to learn it yourself and teach it to her. Maybe she can learn from books and software, but many players can't. In my classes, there are people who keep coming back again and again. They learn better from classes, and one class isn't enough for them. Video poker is a whole lot easier than live poker, but it is nowhere near a trivial game to learn. So, good luck to you. We're now going to take a brief commercial break. We still have lots more questions to go through. So, see you after the commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In February, their promotion is to earn free buffets. Pay 300 points between 3 a.m. and 1 p.m. and get a free lunch buffet. 300 more points before 1 p.m. and you get a dinner buffet. Otherwise, 600 points prior to 8 p.m. and you get the dinner buffet. If they have your email address, on weekends you get to play X and earn Y promotions every Friday through Sunday. They run this weekend promotion 3 or 4 times a year. So if you're ever in Vegas on weekends, it's a good idea to give your email to the South Point, because next time you're in on a weekend, they may be running this promotion. Our February 18th class is Double Double Bonus Ultimate X. They have the 9-6 Double Double Bonus in triple play, which is a 99.7 game. It's a 10 coin per line game where when you earn a paying combination this hand, you earn a multiplier for the next hand. So your strategy is a combination of both getting good hands and building for the multipliers next time. So in the class, we are going to teach a composite strategy, meaning you play the same strategy for all multipliers. It is possible to use a better strategy, and there is better software out there for you to do this, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. We mentioned Black Jack Apprenticeship's new video on Can You Earn $100 a Day Gambling. Colin also sent me a note saying their boot camp in early April is full, and they're looking for a future date. So it is filling up faster now that we're advertising for them. We wish them success at that. If you want to get better at blackjack, that is a really good place to go. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. An additional membership, pro membership, is sold separately at $6.95 a month, $49.95 a year. Or if you already have the gold membership, it can be on for about an extra $3 a month. The biggest advantage of that is that it is video poker software that corrects you perfectly on both Quick Quads and Ultimate X. Now, Ultimate X, we're teaching it this next week at the South Point. But in Ultimate X, you look at the sum of the multipliers. On Triple Play, you can have no multipliers, which actually means a multiplier of 1 for each line, which means the sum of the multipliers is 3. And if you were dealt or earned a full house on each of the lines last time, that comes with a multiplier of 12. So the highest multiplier you can have is 36 as the sum of the multipliers. So between 3 and 36, there are 34 different numbers you can have. Although some games it's impossible to reach 35, for example. In some ways, the only way you get to reach 34 would be to have 2 full houses and 1 flush, which is tough.
It's hard to do.
It is hard to do. You could start off with, for example, a suited Jack 10, which is a holdable combination, to be sure, and end up with 2 full houses and a flush, but doesn't happen very often. So you can check out, you can see what the enhancements are for every level. It's a complicated process, but you can get good at it should you want to. All right, let's go back to our questions from listeners. Somebody wants to know about rapid roulette or airball machines, usually by Interblock. And he can save a lot of time because the results happen much faster than they do on table games. Which brings me to the question, is it a fair game? Does it have the same house edge, 5.25%, basically, American style, is the comparable table game, or is it a slot machine with a program win percentage set by the casino? Why are they allowed in stakes that don't allow roulette to be played with the ball at table games like California? Now, I've heard convincing arguments from experts who say the games are not fair. Michael Shackelford, who is certainly a gambling expert, believes the games are fair. I have no personal experience to be able to judge this. Richard, have you looked into this game?
Yeah, so I would say that the reason that they're allowed in places like California and Oklahoma is they're considered a machine, not a table game. And that's why they're legal in those places. I contacted Bill Zender, who is a former gaming enforcement person, gaming control person. And I asked him in the state of Nevada, is this considered a machine, meaning can they set the hold to whatever they want? Or, like video poker, does it have to deal the same odds as a table game roulette player? And he said, wow, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. He contacted,
good for him.
Yeah. He contacted gaming, and they did not know the answer. Whoever he spoke to at gaming did not know the answer. And they were going to look into it. Now, I never heard back from him, so I don't know what the final result of that question was. I've heard a lot of rumor about those and the dice machines with the big dice under the dome that bounce around. But those are just rumors. So the answer is we do not know. But even if they did react the way a real roulette wheel does, you're giving up 5.25%, and this is not a good game. I'm not sure why you would want to play that anyway.
Yeah, they do have slot clubs, but they might give you 0.25%, not 5.25%.
Right.
Okay. A guy wrote us a long email that I'm shortening. He's playing in the Canadian province of Alberta, playing video poker. Now, most of the video poker games are pretty bad, but they do have some old Bally's Game Maker machines, which are dated machines. They're old. Bally's sold out many years ago to WMS, who since sold out to Scientific Games. And on this Game Maker machine is 9-6 double-double bonus. Now, that pay schedule is 98.98% if you play it perfectly. That, for the sake of argument, I'm going to call 99% even. The slot club pays 0.1%. But periodically, they have 20 times point days, which is a 2% edge on a game that starts out as 99%, giving you a 1% edge until you tell the limit. And sometimes there's no limit, sometimes there is a limit. If he wants to know if that's a good deal. And the answer is it can be. A 1% edge, if you're playing quarters and can play 800 hands an hour, is worth $10 an hour. If they have dollar games, it's worth $40 an hour. $2 games, well, you can do the math. They don't lock up for W2Gs there because the rule is quite a bit different. I don't think they have they keep track of your taxable winnings, of your taxable jackpots, because basically nobody wins at gambling in Canada or whatever. They have a different tax laws. So he says they also offer 8x points every Wednesday, giving you a 99.8 game. But he goes through various other promotions that they're happening at the same time. He does not mention mailers. So it is possible that the Wednesday is a good deal. I don't know the value of these other promotions. I don't know if you get mailers or not. But when you start out at 99.8, it doesn't take a whole lot to make you at least even. But again, if you're a quarter player, you need to get a full 1% advantage to get up to $10 an hour, which is certainly better than losing money in a casino. It's hard to retire on that. All right. Guy asked three interesting questions, one of which, I'm going to dodge a couple of them. First one I'm going to dodge because I don't know, but it's for Richard. If you are auditioning players for blackjack teams, would a failure to execute borderline decision, such as standing on a three-card hard 16 while playing six-deck dealer hit 17, mean that player would fail to test out? Richard.
There's an index number for this, right? So I'm not sure what the three-card 16 has to do with it as opposed to the index number, right? So if the true count was -3, and you had a three-card 16 versus a 10, well, I certainly hope you're hitting it, right? So anyway, the index plays are really minor compared to your bet spread and the number of hands per hour and the penetration of the game. the index plays are minor. And our rule of thumb was always, if you ever have any doubt, make the basic strategy play. So, if there were an error or two in very close index plays, it may not be a big deal at all. I mean, every team is going to be different. And for me personally, it has a lot more to do with honesty and if I felt like I would get along with the person. Is this a person you want to be trapped in a hotel room with for, you know, many nights? And I mean, yes, they have to be competent. But, you know, I remember I was at a blackjack party one time and there were two guys from another team and they were arguing their unit was a $300 unit. Okay. And so what that means is for every 0.5% advantage, they would bet $300. So at a 1.5% edge, they were betting $900. And they were arguing whether one of the guys' bets should have been $375 or $350. And I was like, you guys are just jacking off. I mean, you know, bet $400. It's ridiculous, you know, what you're arguing about. I feel the same way about some of these index plays, you know.
As you mentioned it, are there basic strategy three-card plays? Most basic strategy is all two-card. But the idea that it could conceivably on that game, a three-card hard 16,
could be singled. There used to be a lot of card-dependent plays.
Like stand on a pair of sevens versus a 10.
Yeah, yeah. You stand with 10-6 versus a 10, but not 9-7. Things like that. So, but in a six-deck shoe, it's just not relevant, you know.
All right. Next question. Speaking of luck, did either of us draw a low draft number during Vietnam? And if so, what did you do?
I was in the draft. You're older than I am, so you didn't have that issue. I was in the draft, and my number was over 300. So I had nothing to sweat. But I would not have gone. I planned that if I had a low number, I would first file as a CO, conscientious objector. And if that didn't work, I would have gone to Canada. There's no way I was going to Vietnam. I didn't think of having bone spurs.
But then you'd have to be elected president, and that would really mess up your gambling. Okay, so for me, I did not have a low number. I am older than Richard, and I was somewhat involved in the numbers. But at one point, I lost a scholarship at college because I learned about in one semester poker, bridge, and girls, and so I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, so I signed up to join the Army. I flunked the physical and never served. Today, when soldiers...
You signed up to join the Army?
I did. I didn't know...
In what year was that? I mean, Vietnam would have been going on when it happened, when you did this.
Yeah, early Vietnam, like 67 maybe.
Ah. Well, they were starting to escalate.
Yeah. So today, when soldiers in uniform pass through an airport, people stand up and applaud. Back then, it was really, really different.
Yeah.
Our country is divided today. It was equally divided back then, although on different lines. All right. Next question. Who is the most talented AP you've ever encountered, who is also extremely well known in a completely different field that has nothing to do with casinos, math, or finance?
Well, it's interesting they put finance in there because...
He wants to rule out Ed Thorpe.
Yeah, I guess. You know what? I don't know. I mean, it almost forces it to be an actor or a musician or something, because otherwise, how would they be really well known? Well, I mean, and you for us to know them personally, like it just, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, so there are some famous actors that are poker players. Some of them are supposed to be somewhat reasonable as poker players, but like Gabe Kaplan or whatever, but I don't know him. So I don't think I really know anybody from, other than, you know, a very talented AP I know who's in finance, but he's not famous, you know, so.
Yeah, I am. Part of it is, if I did, part of AP usually includes being under the radar. And so outing him on the air would not be really cool. And I would probably go with Ed Thorpe anyway, even though officially
he was
definitely famous in finance, definitely a good mathematician. And he really wasn't much of an AP player. He played for a little bit, but he created a roadmap that a lot of us have followed.
Well, also Blair Hull, right? Who
also been on this show?
Yeah, you know. But again, he's in finance. But the interesting thing is, you read bios on a lot of famous people, like even Andrew Yang, who we'd love to have on the show, but I think he's kind of busy. You know, he claims to have been a card counter.
Maybe he won't be busy for long.
Yeah. Jeffrey Katzenberg, you know, who's part of DreamWorks. He's Steven Spielberg and Geffen's partner in DreamWorks. You know, he claims to have been a card counter. Who knows how talented these guys were, but...
Well, Anthony Curtis is a sharp player. He's regular on the show, so regular listeners know how sharp he is. And his main job these days is publisher.
Right,
and,
that's true.
And writer. So, and he's already out there as a knowledgeable player, so that's... Anthony is somebody we both know. All right? We are going to wrap this up. We have a couple of recommendations. So it turned out neither one of us was well prepared for recommendations today. So we are both involved in two, I'll call them acting situations in the very near future.
Let's call them performing.
Performing arts. So Richard says I should pick one of them and he'll take the other. So the one I'm going to pick is this Saturday night, February 15th. Richard and I are both part of an improv troupe, the Las Vegas Improvisational Players, 7 to 8:30 on Saturday. It'll set you back $10. Improv is a lot of fun. It is now. I'm actually, it'll be my birthday on Saturday night. I will either be 37 or 73. I'm not saying which one.
Dyslexia will do that to you.
It does. And so will being a liar. So as I'm into my retirement years and not at all interested in retiring at all, I like doing things and keeping my mind busy, heading into the performing arts, shall we say late in life, has been something that is a lot of fun. Wherever town you live in, they probably have some kind of improv group. And it's fun and inexpensive and interesting.
All right. And so mine is, as listeners may know, both Bob and I are very much into storytelling. I actually went to a storytelling workshop last weekend in Los Angeles with a great teacher. His name is David Crabb, and he runs a show called Risk in Los Angeles. They're also in New York. They have a great podcast if you're interested in storytelling. But my recommendation is, here in Las Vegas on February 19th, I'm helping produce a show called The Outburst, and that is at the Public Fit Theater. It's a storytelling evening. Bob is one of the storytellers in that in that show. So that is at 7:30 on February 19th at the Public Fit Theater.
It's actually a Public Fit Theater. And they also has, which is a strange name for a theater, but they also call their location the usual place.
Space. The usual space. Is it? I think it is.
Huh, I thought it was place. Okay. Which is also a strange name. It's not.
Well, that's the location, is the usual place or space. But the theater company is called A Public Fit.
And it's at the corner of Fremont and Maryland. It's downtown Vegas. And it is, the theme is going to be emissaries, missionaries, and ambassadors. Those three in some order, and I'm not sure that's the right order. Most of the storytellers are pretty serious. Mine happens to be rollickingly funny. So you will get things to think about, and you'll laugh your ass off. So keep the questions coming in. We have enough for about two-thirds of another show. So depending on whether or not Richard wants to talk more about Poland, Zlotys, we may do another show next week. We shall see. In any case, thank you, Richard.
Oh, and just in case, send us your questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at RWM21, or we're on Facebook, facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge.
Very good. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.